Brahmagyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmititam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Hukam. We are continuing from last night, and is there anyone here tonight that wasn't here last night? Oh, okay. Okay. If I go right into the topic, I should probably give a little summary, brief summary, to help draw everyone into the topic so it can be relevant. Otherwise, to jump into where we left off, I think might be a little frightful for some of you. So, we are reading from Sri Bhakti Loka, from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's essay discussing the topic of patience and specifically its application to the verse from Upadeshamrita, Vacho Vegam Manasakrota Vegam Jiva Vegam Udara Pasta Vegam, where Srila Rupa Goswami says that a sober person who can control the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the tongue, belly, and the genitals, he is able to make disciples all over the world. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur defines in the beginning of that chapter, I'll just read it, he says, by the quality of dire, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. In other words, he's saying one has to cultivate patience in order to tolerate these urges, because it's not something that immediately happens as soon as one begins devotional service. And he said, and as we said also yesterday, that when persons are impatient, those who are impatient, they cannot do any work, because we explained that the topics of Sri Bhakti Loka are specifically addressed to sadhakas. Therefore, what's implied is the work that needs to be done is internal work, purification of the heart, and removal of these obstacles in the path of devotional service, which cannot be done by our efforts alone. And as we explained, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's conclusive statements about patience, it requires mercy. In fact, elsewhere in Sri Bhakti Loka, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur emphasizes an important point where he speaks about jnanis, or those who are accustomed to mental speculation, who are not inclined towards bhakti. He says one of the specific characteristics they have is that they're not interested in mercy. They have no interest, because they think that by dint of my own mental prowess, my own intelligence, my own strength, I'll be able to achieve perfection for my goal, perfection of my sadhana, of my sadhana. And therefore he says that because they're not interested in the Lord's mercy, they're not considered devotees of the Lord. Because a devotee is somebody who knows that he's exclusively dependent on mercy. And therefore, all of his endeavors are aimed for obtaining mercy, because he knows without mercy, I can't do it on my own. Krishna himself confirms, yoginam api save shamant gitanantaratmana shravan bhajate yomam sami yukta tamamata. Of all yogis, he who abides in me in great faith, worshiping me in devotional service, he's most intimately united with me in yoga, and he's the highest of all. So in other words, the bhakta understands that in the execution of my sadhana and my efforts, I need mercy. And therefore, he has to endeavor to become a qualified receptacle for that mercy. And in order to get that mercy, he has to be patient. And therefore, he concluded by saying the goal that the devotee has, the bhakta, is that he understands that I will get Krishna's mercy either today, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, or in some other birth. But I will continue to serve Krishna's lotus feet without deviation. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, this is patience. This type of patience is required for the successful execution of devotional service. So, devotee knows that mercy is is essential. And therefore, in his efforts to obtain that mercy and to become Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam, he has to tolerate these urges, which are, he sees, he understands, are obstacles on the path of devotional service, which ultimately leads to that mercy. Now, it doesn't mean that mercy doesn't come prior to that stage, but we know that when a devotee's heart is completely pure, as Prabhupada explains, then he is a perfect receptacle for mercy. He explains this in elsewhere in his commentaries to Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmaishvaya Shruta Shabeda Manamadapaman. He says, unless one is materially exhausted, oh my Lord, Queen Kunti prays, those who are on the path of material progress trying to improve themselves by respectable parentage, bodily beauty, high intelligence, they cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So Prabhupada explains that there are different classes or receptacles for mercy. Those who are partial recipients of Krishna's mercy, they may get some partial recipient, a reciprocation, according to the degree that one surrenders. But he says that the receptacles who are full recipients of Krishna's mercy are those whose hearts are completely pure. So we want to become full recipients of that mercy. And therefore, in order to completely purify the heart, we have to endeavor to remove the obstacles on the path of devotional service. We make the effort, but ultimately, it's Krishna who does the cleaning. Srinvatas Faktkata Krishna Punyashavana Kirtana Hridantyasto Hyabhadani Vidunoti Suhit Satam. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's the Super Soul in the heart of all living beings, he cleanses desires for material enjoyment in the heart of those persons who develop the urge to hear his messages, which are themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Interesting that this word, this verse refers to the urge to speak, the urge to hear, because actually one of the first points we're discussing about requirement for patience is to tolerate the urge to speak, and yet Bhagavatam states that those who develop the urge, a different kind of urge, the urge to speak about Krishna, the urge to hear about Krishna, those urges don't need to be tolerated. Once they've manifested, as we described last night in the verse, the Paramahansa devotees who are accepted the essence of life and who accepted Krishna within the core of their hearts, and Krishna is the aim of their lives, it is their nature to speak about Krishna at every moment as if such topics were newer and newer. So they have the urge to speak. And because their words are always connected to the Lord, and their words are always beneficial, both for the speaker and for the hearer. And we also quoted last night that verse in the Bhagavatam. It states that in the place where these pure devotees meet, following rules and regulations, in that place, if one gets an opportunity to hear the flow of their topics, or which are like the continuous flow of the river, and get caught up in their flow, then the result is that one will forget about all the necessities of life, such as hunger and thirst, and one will become free from all kinds of illusion, lamentation, and fear. So that's the benefit we can get by getting caught in the association of devotees who have this urge to speak. It's beneficial. But now we're talking tonight about controlling a different urge to speak. And that's the topic that we're going to speak about tonight, the tendency to speak unnecessarily. It's one thing to speak only about Krishna, and as we said, it seems like, and the Vaishnava Acharya has always emphasized, this is the solution for complete tongue control. Right? We pray every day before we take prasadam. The tongue is very difficult to control. And what controls Krishna? You are very kind. You have given us nice prasadam just to help us control the tongue. So he's helping us. He's giving us Krishna prasadam to control the tongue, and he's manifested his leelas and sent his devotees who are enthused to always speak about them and to awaken within us an attraction to speak about him, and therefore by speaking about Krishna, tongue is controlled. So this is the recommended process. If we could do that, only speak about Krishna, problem solved. We don't have to continue this discussion today. Any questions? So, therefore, with that understanding in mind that it's the goal, and we have to patiently pursue that goal. Yes. When will that day be mine? Kabi habi bolo se dinamara. Aparada Gucci, Shuddha Namaruchi, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. When will that day be mine? When I'll always chant your glories purely. So, when will that day be ours? Until then, what do we do? So, therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us guidelines of how to be patient in our attempts to tolerate the urge to speak, and at the same time practically apply some principles, some guidelines of how to tolerate this urge. Now, tolerate means that the urges are going to be there, right? It means that they're not gone. For one who's purely self-realized, as we said, their urges are always perfectly transcendental. But for those who are still not fully self-realized and still identified, then these other urges need to be kept in check, tolerated, and purified, Krishna-ized, as Prabhupada would say. So we ended last night where Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was stating that for those who do not, he says, if speech is not regulated, enmity arises from talking about others. To speak uselessly is the business of a fool, but out of a desire to unnecessarily engage in speech, the materialists always waste time and face so many distresses. So, therefore, he's specifically speaking about, and as we also elaborated on last night, and I don't need to go into it so much tonight, but the tendency to speak about others is a natural tendency. But for those who are pure in heart, the others spoken about generally are Krishna and his pure devotees. And it's generally spoken of in a way which is always favorable for devotional service. Now, of course, even Lord Chaitanya has given instructions what happens to those who've discovered that previously they may have spoken unnecessarily about somebody, and then they discovered that unknowingly I said something which shouldn't have been said. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat, actually, one devotee came before the Lord in Kuliya when all the people were coming to take darshan of Lord Chaitanya, and said previously, he fell at the feet of Lord Chaitanya, said previously, I said things about you and Vaishnavas because I didn't realize your full glories. And I was thinking this way that, you know, that you are all foolish sentimentalists, or didn't give the specifics of the things that he said, but his question was, now I realize I've made a significant mistake, and he asked, how can I counteract the effects? What should I do? And Lord Chaitanya gave the example. He said that just when a person drinks poison, if he wants to counteract the effects of poison, he has to drink the nectar of immortality. And that will counteract the effects of the poison. So it's in the same way with the same tongue, same mouth, that one drinks poison, he drinks the nectar of immortality, it's counteracted. So he says, in the same way, with the same tongue that we may have unknowingly said something in the past about another Vaishnava, or in this case, it was about the Lord himself. Lord Chaitanya says, with the same tongue that we spoke these things, we should use the tongue for glorifying the activities of the devotees. And in this way, it will counteract the effects for those who unknowingly spoke. Now, of course, I once quoted that from Chaitanya Bhagavat, and one devotee, he asked me a question. He said, how do you avoid being, when you're glorifying devotees, becoming overly sentimental? And sometimes we hear devotees say, oh, you are a pure devotee. Everyone is eager simply to touch your lotus feet. Simply by your presence, you're purifying everyone in this room and all the three worlds. So, yes, we should glorify the devotees, but actually there's a nice verse in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. I don't remember it exactly, but it is Pitu Maharaj. When the professional reciters were glorifying him, Pitu Maharaj said, you know, why are you glorifying something in me which is not manifested yet? And Prabhupada in the commentary says, to glorify someone for qualities which have not yet manifested yet, it's actually an insult. So it's not to counteract the effects of the poison that we just all of a sudden get into this whole, you know, unnecessary, excessive glorification. But to glorify them means to point out, and that's what Pitu Maharaj says, if you're going to say something that's manifested now that you can see. Don't say something that hasn't manifested yet. So we can always appreciate, in any devotee, we can always see something good. Or we should be able to see something good, unless we're just envious. And we just can't see anything good, and we think, you know, everybody's just bad. Especially, that's the nature of an envious mentality, is that he simply Prabhupada says he's like the fly that goes to the sores. He focuses on the sores. Although there's so much nectar, an envious person will just immediately go to the sores. And there's a very wonderful verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by Prahlad Maharaj in his prayer to Lord Nrisimhadev. He said, I can't remember the sense. Svastyastu Vishvasya Kala Prasidatam, it begins. He's praying to Lord Nrisimhadev. He said, may there be good fortune throughout all the universe, and may all envious persons become pacified. He said, may all living entities wholeheartedly take shelter in the process of bhakti yoga. And in this way, by engaging in devotional service, they will be able to think of each other's welfare. And then he says, therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna and always absorb, be always absorbed in thoughts and remembrance of him. So he's praying. It's interesting. I'm bringing this verse up because Prabhupada brings up a very interesting point in the word-for-word translation of this verse. The verse is Svastyastu Vishvasya Kala Prasidatam. And now the word Kala means envious person. Kala. And Prabhupada translated in the word translation, he puts envious persons, and in parentheses, he puts almost everyone. It's right there. Fifth canto, 18th chapter, 9th verse. Go there. Look at the word for word translation. Envious persons, almost everyone. So, Prahlad Maharaj is praying, may there be good fortune throughout all the universe, and may all envious persons become pacified, because when they engage in bhakti yoga, then they'll be able to think of each other's welfare, because an envious person can't think of the welfare of anyone else, because he's envious. He only thinks his heart is hard. If he's envious, generally, the symptom of an envious person is this discontent, resentful longing that's in his heart about another person's qualities or possessions or sometimes even good fortune. You know, it's there, burning in the heart. And it's a longing. And therefore, when we see their qualities and being envious, and that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to address here. He says, sometimes persons out of envy, they'll speak about others' characters in order to develop and prove their own reputation. So in other words, an envious person is thinking about how to stand above everyone else. But if I can't do it because of my own qualities, better to step on everyone's head. And that way I stand above everyone else. Push everyone else down. So how do you push everyone else down? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, and that's just a way where he speaks about, you know, that by discussing unnecessarily, talking unnecessarily about other people, we create enmity. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, and this is where we left off last night, he says, talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service. Many people talk about others to establish their own reputation. Being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. So, we have to be very careful, obviously, if we're going to speak about others, and if we're not quite sure of what our motive is, that's good. Sometimes people are too sure of what their motives are. And it may not always be right. They may not always be accurate. They may think, I'm the savior. I want to be recognized as the savior. You know, I'm the next incarnation. I will save everyone by exposing every fault in everyone else. I mean, that's right in that Mahabharata, wasn't it? When Duryodhana was asked to go throughout the kingdom to find somebody who was better than him, and he couldn't find anyone who was better than him. And when Yudhishthira Maharaj was sent, I can't find to find somebody. He said, I can't find anyone who's lower than me. So obviously Yudhishthira Maharaj, his heart was clean. You know, he thought himself Trinada Pisu Nechina Torori Vasahishtana, lower than the straw in the street. Which is, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says, it's the Siddha Pranali for Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Trinada Pisu Nichina, Tora Apisa Hishnana, Manina Manadina, Kirtaniya Siddhahari. He said, this is Siddha Pranali. This is our Siddha, how to achieve, a means for achieving perfection. To realize this verse means to think ourselves lower than the straw on the street, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others. How can one offer all respect to others unless he sees something of value in everyone? And Srila Jiva Goswami, in his commentary in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he speaks about the materialistic devotee. He's still a devotee, but he still has this envy in his heart. And he says that the symptom of the materialist is that he cannot respect other devotees. Can't respect them. And because he can't respect, he can't see the good qualities. And can't respect them for those good qualities which they are manifest there. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami says, such persons are useless for preaching to non-devotees. It's a heavy statement. Because they'll never be able to offer proper respect. If you can't even see it in devotees, then... So, therefore, a Vaishnava should be ready to offer all respect to others. And Lord Chaitanya has declared in many places, Chaitanya Bhagavat, he guarantees that anyone who respects all living entities, he says they will be awarded with devotional service. And he cautions, be very careful. So we have to be careful that to honor to respect means that we see, yes, there are good qualities, so that we see good qualities, we should be willing to speak about them. We don't have to become excessive, but we can say, oh, did you see so-and-so Das? Every morning, he comes to Mangalartik, steady as a rock. This is a very good example, isn't it? We see, when we get with others, we can counteract the effects of any unknowing mistake or unknowing statement made about others. So this is one way that we can speak about others. This is the point. Certainly, it's not a disadvantage to glorify other Vaishnavas. It's beneficial, purifying. It makes us humble. It makes us, it actually allows us to humble ourselves in the presence of other Vaishnavas and to open up our eyes and to see so many good qualities, because a preacher has to preach by inspiring what he sees, the good that he sees in others. That's how he brings others up. He sees the good and he inspires that and brings them up because he inspires them to be Krishna conscious, to come up, to serve the Lord. It's not that a preacher is somebody who always points out all the faults. You can be very busy, occupied all day long preaching like that. But it's not necessarily going to change people's hearts, unless their hearts have been changed by another preacher. And then they're humble and they're willing to tolerate whatever abuses. But somebody has to do it. That's what a preacher does. He sees the good. And therefore he's capable to speak about the good of others, to glorify others, to recognize and to encourage others the things that they do which are positive. Now, of course, you may say, well, I know Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that he who glorifies me is my worst enemy. So I'm going to be merciful to them. And I'm never going to say anything good about them. It's for your purification. I'm never going to say anything good about them. One has to know when is the right time to do it and when is not the right time. Especially, the point is, if unknowingly you may have said something about that Vaishnava. If we have unknowingly said something about them out of envy, pride, or whatever it may be, and we may have one time said something and then, wow, I should counteract that. I shouldn't let it sit there. Of course, we know the example for those who knowingly do it, then it's a different category. For those who knowingly do it, then one has to go back to the Vaishnava and beg forgiveness for knowingly offending a Vaishnava. But we can speak forever on that topic. But right now we're specifically speaking about how to avoid the influence of envy, which is kala, as Prabhupada said, almost everyone. And Prahlad, unless we get the mercy of such Vaishnavas who are actually thinking about our welfare, who's praying to Lord Nrisimhadev, may there be good fortune throughout the whole universe. May all living entities, praying for all living entities, may they all become pacified. All envious persons become pacified. So that is mercy when Vaishnavas pray on our behalf. So this is explained here. Sometimes being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. And, you know, we can give so many examples, but I think it should be self-evident how envy can sometimes prompt us to speak about a fault that we may see in somebody else. And Prabhupada used to say, why should we look for the faults? Just like looking for the pockmarks on the moon, why not appreciate the moon for its illuminating potency instead of looking at the pockmarks? And Prabhupada even one time gave you the example. He says, just like if you're standing in front of the sink washing your hands and somebody comes over and says, your hands are filthy. Well, I'm washing them. So what is the advantage of saying that our hands are filthy if we're washing them? Of course, if we're not washing them, then we may have to point that out. Everybody's supposed to be attempting, and that's why we're speaking about addressing the topics of sadhakas who are all attempting to wash their own hearts. That's the work they're doing. They're seeing that I have certain things in my own heart that I need to work on, and therefore Bhakti Vinod Thakur says patience means that the sadhaka first controls himself and then he can control others. And why can he control others? We already explained in the story last night of Raghunath, because he's not tempted, he's not allured by anything material, but he also can control others because when your heart becomes clear, clean, there are symptoms that are self-evident, they're manifest. And one of the symptoms is you become happy, you become joyful. And when you become genuinely happy and joyful, and in all your dealings with others, so exemplary, you've got something that's very attractive to others who are interested in achieving the same result. Not only is it very attractive, but you'll find that others will come to you and ask you. You don't have to go to them. They'll see. He's happy. He's happy. I once told this story. I don't know if it's too long. Anyways, forgive me. It's about myself, but I think it's an example of a story, of experience I once had. And I'll make the story short. I was flying in the plane in America, and I was, because I flew a lot on that airlines, I was called up at the beginning of the flight, and I was upgraded to business class, and they let me go on the plane first. And unknown to me at the time, a man was looking at me, and he was watching me going on the plane. I was dressed like this. He came, and then when everyone else boarded, he sat, it just so happens, he sat next to me. Now, I didn't know it at the time. So he turned to me after the plane took off, and he said, "Do you know your sweater doesn't match your clothes?" So I said, "No, thank you." And then he just turned away and just went about reading his book. I think that was his opening. He was trying to break the ice or something. I don't know. I couldn't really tell. But then he turned to me and he said, "Okay, what are you?" Not who are you, what are you? To make a long story short, I answered this question, what I am. I started telling him about myself and started telling him, you know, why. He asked a lot of questions. You know, why this color cloth, you know, why this, why do you do that, why, usually the typical first openers, you know, what's the stuff on your forehead? He really started getting very serious and started asking a lot about myself. And it was a four-hour flight. So after a couple of hours of asking all these questions, he started telling me about himself. And then he said, you know, he started telling me about his family, about his children, about his mother-in-law and father-in-law, about his friends, and how wealthy he is. He says, he's an extremely wealthy man. He says, "I'm on this flight, you know, three times a week when I fly internationally. Otherwise, I'm flying my own plane. I have this, I have a beautiful house, so much money. I have no close friends." And, you know, the whole, everything, pouring. And while he's talking to me, occasionally the flight attendant came over and added a little more wine to his glass. He wasn't drunk, but you could see he was trying to. And then, at one point of the conversation, his whole facial expression changed, and he looked really angry. And I started to get worried. No, I thought he was, you know, I couldn't figure it out, you know. And I thought, look, I didn't ask you to tell me these things. He just voluntarily. And then he started saying, he said, "Why am I telling you these things? You're a complete stranger." I said, "I haven't told all these things to anybody." And they just stared out the window for, I don't know, which seemed like eternity, because he still had that angry look on his face. And I just waited for another indication that I should say something. And all of a sudden, he clapped his hands, and a big smile came across his face. And he said, "That's it." I said, "What?" He said, "That's it." "What is it?" He said, "That's why I told you all these things." I said, "Why?" And he looked me right in the eyes and he said, "Because you're happy." "You don't have a wife." "You don't have possessions. All your possessions in the belly of the plane. You don't have a home. And you're happy." And then the next question he asked, "Tell me, how did you get like that?" Serious. Of course, the whole rest of the flight, I just talked about Prabhupada. because obviously, if it wasn't for Prabhupada, I wouldn't have known anything about what is happiness. So the whole rest of the flight, and then he asked me, he said, does he have some books? I said, yes. He says, and I told him about Bhagavad Gita was the first book. He said, I want that book. He said, look, I'm a businessman. He said, I know when I see a good investment. I didn't happen to have a Bhagavad Gita with me at the time, but I arranged for something. But I also explained to him in the course of the conversation that you don't have to give up wife, home, bank account to be happy. So I made it clear that, but still, it's just, it's an example that if you actually become happy by devotional service, then people will want, you've got something. People will want, how, tell me, what do I need to do? Automatically you can tell and help, tell people and help people without having going out and point everything that everybody's doing wrong, because you have a real good, strong footing, foundation, to, because they want to hear. They want to hear. So being an example sometimes is even more important than precept, as Prabhupada even himself quoted as saying. Example is more important than precept. So this emphasizes the point that, yes, a sadhaka is patient. He controls himself first, and then he controls others. And not, he avoids controlling himself, and then just controls, tries to control others. Because that's artificial. So we have to be able to see the good qualities in others, and we have to be very careful to not, due to an envious temperament, unnecessarily criticize something that doesn't really need to be advertised. Doesn't really need to be spoken. Sometimes we think if we say it to enough people, people will see, okay, he's not really the kind of person we thought he was, and now we'll look up to you. But that's not the way to become successful. That's not the way to become recognized. Do we want to become recognized for being a good fault finder? That's not the way to become recognized. The way to become recognized is by being a good sadhaka with a clean heart. And therefore, we have to be very careful about what we say and about others. Is it necessary? Do I need to say it? Is this the person who needs to hear it? What is this person going to do with this information? Do they need to hear it? What are they going to do with it? And what benefit am I going to get by telling him? So this is the first part. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he says, he concludes that point by saying, the minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. So if you're sadhakas, and the goal is to fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, we should know this is a major obstacle. Talking about others should be rejected in all respects. But in the practice of devotional service, there are many favorable topics that are faultless, even though they are about others. They're good things. Many favorable topics that one can speak about others. We already mentioned one, but... And then he says, in order to completely renounce talking about others, one needs to live in the forest. And he says the two different types of practicing devotees are the householders and the renunciates. Because the renunciates have no business whatsoever with sense enjoyment, they can give up talking about others in all respects. Well, but although renunciates sometimes will go on to explain, they have to talk about others in order to give a clear instruction. And we'll talk about that. But first, in general, renunciants, because just like Lord Chaitanya instructed Raghunath Das Goswami, first instruction, he said, do not speak like ordinary people or hear what they have to say. You know, one should give up Gramya Katha. So a renunciate, and even there's example in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhavendra Puri. Lord Chaitanya, when describing Madhavendra Puri, he said that Madhavendra Puri would travel without any companion. Wherever he went, he was always by himself because he didn't want to run the risk of speaking unnecessary topics in somebody with in the association of somebody else. So he always stayed alone so that he could be silent and not speak unnecessarily about topics, unnecessary topics. And then there are so many examples of renunciates who, just like the Avanti Brahman, the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, when he actually took sannyas and he became realized, the first thing he did is he took a vow of silence, didn't speak to anybody. And even many people tried to provoke him, would insult him and do many things to him, try to get him to speak, agitate him in so many ways, but no. So in general, the renunciants, because they're not supposed to be involved in the activities, same activities the householders are involved in, there's really no need for them to talk about others, for those who live in the forest. But of course, we see in our society, sometimes the renunciates are in the position that they have very big families. And sometimes they have to speak about the greater family members, but in a non-envious way. In a way that's caring, concerned, hearing about others, not to find fault, but to help others. So sometimes it may be necessary to either hear or to speak about others. But in general, the renunciants have no business in talking about others. But because a householder is engaged in earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining the family, he cannot completely give up talking about others. It is best for him to live in a Krishna-conscious family. When all one's material activities are related with Krishna, then even his unavoidable talk about others becomes sinless and a part of devotional practice in relation to Krishna. So he's explaining that because householders, they have to engage in these activities, earning, saving, protecting, maintaining the family. Inevitably, in the course of their work, they have to talk about others. Inevitably, in the course of their family affairs, they have to speak about others. So, but still, he says he should not talk about others in a way that is detrimental to anyone. He should talk about others only whatever little is necessary in his Krishna-conscious family. He should not talk about others without reason. So, again, emphasis is, yes, whatever is necessary to fulfill the needs of responsibilities of householder life, it's necessary, especially when one is working, dealing with so many other people and having to discuss what the work of other people, the activities, the obstacles created by other people. And in the course of his work, in the course of maintaining, he has to speak about others. But he should always do whatever is necessary. And if he lives in a Krishna-conscious family life, which means his life, his householder life, is meant for hearing and chanting about Krishna, and whatever necessities or work that he does for maintaining family is only done for the purpose of maintaining their bodies so they can hear and chant about Krishna, then whatever discussions about others he engages becomes sinless. And that is, he's saying, therefore it's the safest position is to be in Krishna-conscious family life. And he said, when all one's material activities are related with Krishna, then even his unavoidable talk about others becomes sinless and a part of devotional practice in relation to Krishna. So these are some guidelines, but there's a lot more. And I don't think I'm going to complete this. There's still more that we'll continue tomorrow, and maybe we can leave some time for questions. But this is a very important point, the point that he makes next. He says, moreover, when a guru enlightens his disciple on some topic, then unless he occasionally talks about others, his instruction may not be clear. In other words, sometimes when we have to speak and to emphasize a certain point about bhakti, we always try to emphasize the positive, but sometimes it may not be so clear. We may have to point to a bad example. This is, you may say theoretically, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. But sometimes you may say, look what happens if you don't do this. Oh, if you do this. Look what happens. So sometimes in order to conclude a topic, he may have to speak about others. And he gives an example. He quotes Shukadev Goswami instructing Parikshit Maharaj. He says, moreover, when a guru enlightens his disciple onto some topic, then unless he occasionally talks about others, his instruction may not be clear. When previous Mahajans have talked about others in this way, there is merit in such talk, not fault. As Shukadev Goswami said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Nidraya hriyate naktam vyavayin javavaya diva charte haya rajan kutumba bharanenava deha pachakalatradishu atma sanyeshva satsupi tesham pramato nidhanam pashyanapi napashyati. Now, Shukadev Goswami is going to talk about others. Who's he talking to? Parikshit Maharaj is talking about envious householders. He says the lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. Persons devoid of atma-tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. So he's speaking in a general way. Speaking in a general way, yes. He's speaking about envious householders. Some may say, why are you doing that? So, in fact, I remember there was, I think it's in the Prabhupada Nectar book, Prabhupada was speaking very strongly using the word rascals. They are rascals. And one man was saying, Prabhupada, Swamiji, you're supposed to be Samadarshana. Why are you speaking in this way? And he was trying to find fault. Prabhupada was speaking so strongly about, because he said, no, I'm not speaking this way. Krishna speaks this way. Namam chamos tuduskritam buddha. And he says, Krishna says they are rascals. I simply repeat what Krishna says. And then Prabhupada also said, he said, Samadarshana, yes, that's true. He says, but I'm not that high. I have to make distinctions. He says, I have to see who's following Krishna's instructions and who's not following Krishna's instructions. And I make no discrimination. That is my Samadarshana. I see everyone equally. I tell everyone, you are falling, you are not falling. He said, that is, you're speaking about higher, I'm not so high. But I'm telling everybody what Krishna says. And then the man said, but Swamiji, what are you doing? Aren't you doing anything? You're just simply repeating. What are you doing? What's your accomplishment? What's your achievement? And Prabhupada said, very firmly, he said, no, I stand on the foundation of the words of Krishna and the parampara, my spiritual masters. This is my duty to repeat what they have said and to give it to everyone without discrimination. So Prabhupada also, sometimes he would speak in order to make a point clear. Sometimes a spiritual master has to point to an example. Prabhupada said certain things about many people. Is Prabhupada, was he a Prajalpi? Was he an Aparadi? No, he was instructing. He said, don't, just be careful, don't. Sometimes the guru has to instruct in a general way, to make his point clear. Or sometimes he may even have to allude to a particular person, or sometimes he may even have to name the person. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives all three examples here. In this first one, he's speaking about, well, the lifetime of envious householders. They pass their day in simply earning money and maintaining family members, and night just sex life. And they're devoid of atmatattva, and they do not inquire into these problems of life, and being too attached to fallible soldiers, they still do not see their inevitable destruction, although sufficiently experienced. So it's a very strong statement. So this, according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, there's merit in such talk, not fault, when it's not overly excessive, but it's made expressed to make the point clear. Be careful. Don't fall into the trap and live a life like this. We can say so many things. Yes, do this, do this, do that. This is all positive. But then he has to say, what? Don't fall into the trap and live like this. So that is one. And then he gives another example. And I'll probably end with this. And as I said, to summarize, this is to help us understand the topic, which is tolerating the urge to speak. And as we said, of course, the best thing is tolerating the urge to speak is to only speak about Krishna. But as we said, on certain times, it's unavoidable. We have to speak about others. But we should know the guidelines to follow so that we can practice speaking about others in a way that is not sinful. And be patient that someday, that by continuing to follow these guidelines, being patient that someday a natural taste for speaking about Krishna will awaken within the heart. And when that natural taste for speaking about Krishna awakens within the heart, then problem solved. But until that point, we have to be patient. But patience doesn't mean just we wait. No, we have to do something. We have to make some endeavor. So the acharyas are giving us guidelines of the endeavors we can make to tolerate the urge to speak until we become so attracted to topics of Krishna. Just like there's a verse, smartavyam satatam vishnu vismartavyo najatu chit savaviti nasedasyo etiyo eva kinkura. This verse states that Krishna must always be remembered and he must never be forgotten. All the rules and prohibitions given in the scriptures are meant to be the servants of these two principles. So Krishna must always be remembered. And conversely, don't forget him. So all the sava vidhi nishedashur, all the vidhis and all the nishedas, all the proper activities, the proactive activities, and the nishedas are the prohibited activities, they're meant to serve these two principles. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, this verse, he says that generally the word satatam means always. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantas chadvidavata. Krishna says, always chanting my glories. So Krishna is saying, always remember Krishna, never forget. He says, generally the word satatam means always, but in this verse there's a different meaning to the word always. He said, why is there a different meaning? He said, the reason why there's a different meaning is because we're dependent upon the vidhis, the positive activities, and we should know what the prohibited activities are, nishedhas, things that we shouldn't do. Why, if a person is spontaneously attracted to always speak about Krishna, who always thinks about Krishna, who always remembers Krishna, who always speaks about him, why does he have to think about prohibited activities? He doesn't. Why should he even think about prohibited activities? In fact, he doesn't think about prayer, although he may to teach by his example, but he personally doesn't have to think about it. If he's acharya, he may have to think to teach others. But for himself, he doesn't have to think about what are prohibited activities. So this verse says, the positive activities, remember Krishna, the prohibited activity, forgetting it. The positive activities which are conducive for remembering Krishna, we accept, and those which are prohibited, we have to be conscious and avoid them. He says, therefore, satatam in this verse doesn't mean always, because if it was always, we wouldn't have to be concerned about the prohibited activities. So he says, therefore, satatam in this verse means every day. Every day. Every day, we have to remember, make the effort to remember Krishna, and we have to be careful to avoid those things which are not conducive for remembering Krishna. Just like Krishna says in 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, what is that verse? My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealths. Oh, I forgot the Sanskrit. If you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, you will develop a desire to attain to me. 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You remember the Sanskrit? Atachitam samataktam nashiknosi mai stiram. Abhyasa yogena tato mama chaptam dananjaya. Yes. And so he says, if you can't fix your mind upon me without deviation, follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. What are the regulative principles of bhakti yoga? They're not no gambling, no meat eating, no intoxicating. No, these are regular principles of human life. He's talking about to regulate our daily activities in such a way that we're favorably remembering Krishna and we're not forgetting him. And avoiding those prohibited activities every day. We should be conscious of those prohibited activities. And in this way, I got lost. I forgot the point that I was supporting. But in this way, by always accepting that which is favorable or rejecting that which is unfavorable, gradually, yes, now I remember, the mind will always think of favorably Krishna. But until we come to that point, we should know what vidhis and nishedhas should be accepted and rejected, and practice that, and patiently continue to practice that, the things that should be avoided and the positive things which should be accepted, and by so doing, patiently pursuing the goal, we'll get Krishna's mercy. And someday, we'll be able to be totally unaffected by these things, having awakened a taste for exclusively hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this is how this topic is connected to patience. Just bringing it back to the main theme, patience. But there's more about what are ways that we can speak about others. So maybe I should stop here for now. Are there any quick questions? Quick questions. Okay, Gopinath.
Very quickly, in outside world, in working environment, we are constantly surrounded by extremely envious people. How to counteract that effect to come to somewhere close to where you are in?
How to counteract the effects that envious people have upon us?
for the inspiring class and basically reminding the preacher's business to inspire others. And also thank you for sharing your personal example in plane. You mentioned the example of Duryodhan and Yudhishthir Maharaj, where Yudhishthir Maharaj said that I cannot see any person which is lower than me. So my question is around how to understand, how to remind constantly that we are the servant of everyone, and or other way around, how to see all of us are better than me.
Well, to some degree, we did address that by always looking for the good qualities. Because our tendency, Father Prabhupada says, familiarity breeds contempt. Especially, we're engaged in social dealings in this world, and we tend to play roles with the people that we associate with. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that association here in another section, in I can't remember which section it is, he says that association doesn't mean physical proximity. He says association means that when we associate through the process of the dati pratigrinati goyamakyati prichati with love and affection. He says when there's love and affection, that's association. So the point that he makes is it's not just physical proximity that is the association. Now, I'm sorry. Can you just bring me back to the main point that you were?
How to constantly remember that our subordinate nature, that we are the servant of everyone, or other way around, how to see that everyone are better than me?
Yes. So, by looking for the good qualities in others. And as I was saying, that the tendency is that when we associate according to our social roles, familiarity breeds contempt. And sometimes we begin to see the fault. And when you're continuously associating in relationship, in that relationship, according to whatever social designation you may have, sometimes that fault seems to grow bigger and bigger. Becomes amplified, almost to the point that when you see that person, the only thing you see is the thing that bothers you the most about them. Isn't it? That happens. It can happen if we're not careful. That's what Prabhupada says, familiarity breeds contempt. Sometimes it happens in marital affairs too. Anyways. You know, it's something that you're up against all the time, and it's so magnified, that's all you can see. So, we have to break the paradigm. You have to step out of that and to be able to see the good, which means to step out of that role and to associate with others from a completely different spiritual platform. And if we don't associate them from that completely spiritual platform, if we always associate with them in terms of, well, I work with that person, we do the same things together, and I need this from him, he needs this from me. And, you know, every time he comes and asks for it, he sometimes gets impatient, and then, you know, sometimes the mind gets like that. But we break out of that by associating on a spiritual platform, which is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, which is, according to Rupa Goswami, the dati pratigrinanti guyama kyati prichati. Sharing, loving exchanges. Giving gifts, accepting gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, discussing topics of Krishna. Breaks down. You begin to see that person from a completely different perspective. And that's a very powerful way, a very powerful way to see the good qualities in others. It trains our minds to see that, yes, this person is actually interested in becoming Krishna conscious. He is greater than so many millions of living entities in this world. Anyone. Such Samahatma Sadurlabha. Such great souls are very rare. And why don't I don't see that. So this is a way to step out and to see the good qualities in others. And then, of course, we say to recognize, to glorify the good qualities, and to serve them. To serve, to appreciate the good qualities, and to see, yes, the benefit I can get is to serve them. And as we quoted yesterday, we quoted one verse in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, where, not fourth canto, yes, fourth canto, where Narada Muni is instructing. And he said that the different ways to associate when one sees in the superior, right? He should be very happy to see him, to serve him, to see to his comforts. When one sees someone who is less, he should avoid deriding him and enlighten him. And when he's with those who are equal, he should maintain friendship with them and not compete with them. So not compete to maintain friendship is that we should actually, we can even submit ourselves to them as if they're superior. They may not treat us that way, but then we'll be able to get so much from them. And we'll be able to see so many wonderful qualities, and we'll serve them. In this way, we're serving everyone. We're serving those who are more advanced. We're serving those who are equal by making friendship with them and giving gifts, accepting gifts, revealing one's mind and confidence, inquiring confidentially. We're serving those who are less fortunate than us, in a lesser position, by enlightening them. And then Prabhupada also says at the end of the commentary, and those who know nothing about Krishna consciousness, we should give them, just freely distribute to them. And this way, we're servant of everyone. At one time, I remember this lecture, Prabhupada was at Uppsala University. Prabhupada was speaking about the rabbinical class of man, how the first class society, and an envious man in the audience started pointing out to Prabhupada, he said, "You think you're a first-class man, otherwise why would you sit on a big seat like that and see all these flowers?" He says, "You think you're a first-class man." And Prabhupada, he just humbly submitted, he folded his hands, he said, "I'm not a first-class man." He said, "I'm fifth-class man. I'm servant of everyone in the four classes." That was Prabhupada. So what to speak of us? Okay. What should I do? Should we have a short kirtan? Yes, okay. We'll take more questions tomorrow night. Okay? We'll have a short kirtan. Thank you. Hare Krishna.